Hey everyone, welcome to So What Happens Next with another episode of Small Screens. I am one of your hosts, Amber.
And I'm Thomas.
And today we'll be going over Lovecraft Country. Pretty good.
Nice.
We're covering our last episode of the spooky Halloween countdown.
That's right. We are wrapping up. So this week is Halloween. It's coming up on Saturday, right?
Wow, really?
Yep. So we're kind of calling the end of the countdown here. And the next episode will be in November, which will start, it'll start something new that we talked about our last episode, but we'll save the details for that for the end of this one.
Yeah, so let's dive into it. Lovecraft Country takes place in the 1950s, and it's about an African-American man who travels with his uncle and later on love interest to find his missing father.
It starts out like in a pretty honest, simple kind of plot. Like, my dad's missing, uncle who travels for like the Green Book, which, for those of you that don't know, like the Green Book was the sort of safe travel guide for African Americans during the 1950s,
and yeah, to avoid like sundown towns, which, right, if you don't know, like those are towns that you want to avoid if you're black,
which is something I didn't know about until this show. Like, I didn't know about sundown towns and counties and shit until this show. I mean, like, mm-hmm. I kind of just figured that the times were terrible and those types of things could just happen anytime, let alone nighttime. So,
it's really surprising that it's still a thing today.
Yeah.
Like, there are still people that refer to these, like, small towns as sundown towns.
Yeah. No, it's terrifying.
Which is mind-boggling.
It's terrifying. And I mean, like, maybe it's not surprising in 2020 that it's there, but it also is surprising because you think that we would have come further than that by now. But, oh my God, it's terrible. And this show really doesn't pull any punches when it comes to the racist aspect. So they definitely don't glamorize the 1950s like a lot of other particular shows and movies and stuff like that do. So, yes.
And this show takes place in Chicago, so you definitely have like South Chicago where it's predominantly black, and then you have North Chicago,
which is a predominantly white. For a few of the episodes, like, that's kind of the whole local non-magical issue, is that the love interest Letty moves to the north side and gets a house, and all the white people are like, this isn't fucking cool, because she lets a bunch of like of her friends who are predominantly black people stay at, she has like a boarding house, so she makes it a boarding house, and so all the white people start freaking out, and it's like they're like burning crosses and shit, and they have like race war for a minute, and then some magical shit happens. It's fucking weird. The show is so, like, it's definitely creepy in that Lovecraftian way.
Yeah, like, it combines racism and horror really well.
White, like, the horror's there, and it's maybe driven by it.
I think the horror
is
people who want to cause you harm having power. And not just, like, you know, like, power, you know. But it's, like, magic. Like, being able to wield magic and, you know, make your life.
Exactly. Like, it's like the power exists, and the main crux of the show, you kind of find out, is that there's this white woman who's descendant from this magic dude, whatever. There's like a bunch of warlocks and shit.
Yeah.
She, and it's like a boys club, and she's like, she never got to be part of the boys club because she's a lady, and so she's like, I want to become immortal. And I have to admit, and we'll get to it, but this show was like stellar, I think, until the last episode for me. Like, I don't want to say it ruined it, but I think of all the episodes, the weakest one's the last one.
That's interesting.
Like, it just hit weird. We'll get to it. But yeah, she wants to become immortal. And in order to do that, she has to use our main character's like blood, right? Because mm-hmm. he's also descended from the same dude she is, because he like raped his ancestor or something during like slavery times yeah. in America. But yeah, and it's like she's, I guess like she herself isn't racist. She just seems to hate everybody. But like a lot of the other shit, it's like other people with magic who are also racist. And it's kind of like a horrifying concept, right? Because it's mm-hmm. like, what if racists actually had magic to do shit? And it's like, oh fuck no, like that's not cool. It's like, you think Voldemort's bad. Like, some of the shit, like what that cop does to the little girl. Oh, fuck no, man. Like, yeah. fuck no.
Let's actually talk about, like, some of the episodes. Yeah. I know we're not going to be able to cover all of them, like, in detail, but we can go over some of the ones that we really liked. So I think one of the ones you just mentioned was when Letitia, she buys the house with her mom's...
Inheritance.
Yeah. Yes. So she buys a house up in North Chicago.
Plot twist, it's not her inheritance. Dun, dun, dun.
Exactly. So she moves in and she kind of, again, it's run like a boarding house. So she right. has all of her friends staying there paying rent, of course. And it's a really gorgeous house, but there's like a sinister history behind it, because that yeah. house has not been bought for a very long time.
Right. And it's like kind of run down. Like it's a fixer upper for sure. Yeah.
But it has an elevator, like a bomb ass right. elevator.
It has like an elevator, which ends up being kind of like a really big plot point to a lot of the show, if I recall. It goes underground. So like basically, what was it? It was like the house was owned by some diabolical professor.
Yeah, professor at UChicago.
Who was like stitching people, like Frankensteining people.
Yeah,
basically.
He was experimenting on people and like
and magic.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he was trying to, I guess, what they show later in the show is that you can take certain body parts if you have like your arm cut off, let's say, or like you damage like something, like right. you can, you know, take someone else's like bodily like organs or whatever right. to replace that.
And he was like killing black people to achieve this, like yes. he was like chopping up black people and like either I don't remember if it was like clear like stitching them together or just like putting them on other
I think
people,
he was stitching like, them together, so which is okay. why you had weird, like it was really creepy.
It was really creepy.
Just seeing that, like the ghost basically yeah. and you know, seeing a baby's head on like a
well, that's
fully
right.
grown
yeah,
man.
Yeah, he like put him on. That's right.
Yeah, seeing yeah. a woman whose face is just like blown off, and like I think there was like a pregnant lady.
Something.
Like, yeah,
there was a lot of like it was really like it scared you kind of type shit.
Yeah, like it kind of reminded me of like 13 Ghosts or something like that. Like yeah. I don't know if you've seen that movie,
seen
but
Ghosts,
it's
no.
just different types of ghosts, and some are good, some are whatever, and then some are like bad.
See,
like
I always
you don't
mix
want to
up,
run into them.
I always mix up 13 Ghosts and The Frighteners.
Yeah.
And I don't know why, because I don't feel like they're the same movie at all, but mm-hmm. I always go, yeah, I've seen 13 Ghosts. I'm like, no, I haven't. That's The Frighteners. That's mm-hmm. a completely different movie. But yeah, no, and this is really where like this episode might have been like the make or break point for me, because I remember up until this we're like fucking around in the like Lovecraft town.
Yep. Artem,
where they first meet all the like racist magic people mm-hmm. and where the uncle gets killed. Also, spoilers for Lovecraft Country if you planned on watching it, sorry. But yeah, so they're already back in Chicago by this point, and it kind of like this is where it took like a step in the anthology kind of direction, because
yeah.
I thought like, oh, we kind of did like a setup, we're going to be doing like individual stories, and I have to admit like I was a little bummed. Like I was like, really? Like we kind of had an interesting overarching plot here, like now we're just gonna like watch them fuck around with magic and ghosts and shit. I mean, I guess that's cool, but I don't know, I was kind of hoping to get some sort of resolution, which we totally do of all the Artem shit. And like this really made this show for me, because it was that hump that I needed to get over. And when they discover that, like, the elevator goes all the way underground to, like, secret... Or it kind of gives you a teaser, right? Because mm-hmm. the camera pans further down than the basement. And there's, like, underground passages riddled with corpses. And it was just like, oh, shit. But, like, this one was also, like, super fucking creepy. And, like, they had that voodoo lady or whatever come in and do stuff.
Yeah.
Like, this episode really nails that like horror feel for this show to me. And it's probably one of my favorite ones just because it's like that. This show, by the way, is also like produced by J.J. Abrams and Jordan Peele. And I gotta say, you can really see both of those two like in this. Mm-hmm. But this episode is definitely where it really blended together. Like you kind of had that action in your face ghost moment like J.J. Abrams. But it also had like a lot of depth to it that yeah. I feel like, you know, Peele was really bringing to the table on this one. Like the racial depth of like, let's use like me, Letty, and the other like victim ghosts who are all black defeat the super racist scientist wizard ghost who did this to them. And it's like such a cool, powerful scene to watch all of them like fuck this ghost up.
Yeah, that was definitely one of, I guess, your favorite ones.
That was, yeah, I think off the top of my head, I think that was my favorite episode.
Gotcha.
If not, I mean, there's some others that are like really good, but like I said, that last one, I also like the one where they're in Korea.
Yeah. The Meet Me in Daegu.
Yeah.
Yeah. That one was really interesting. So basically in this episode, we go back to when the main character, Tick.
He was in the Korean War, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And so basically it's covering his time in the army.
Yeah.
And in Korea, he meets this young Asian or Korean lady. And apparently she's like a almost like a nine-tailed fox is like what I want to say.
I don't remember what they called her.
Yeah, there was like a specific name. But basically she's like a monster who feeds on men and basically like puts one of her many, you know, nine-tailed tails into their eyeballs and basically like reads like their entire life.
I feel like
this. And then just like kills them.
I feel like, so just to preface all of it, up until this point, like Tick keeps getting calls from or calling a woman in Korea. I assume a Korean woman based on the accent. But like he's calling this woman very regularly and either just like straight hanging up or she's like says mysterious things to her or something like that. Or to him, I should say. And like he just like hangs up. And this is like, this was another, I like this episode because it was like we finally get some closure on this. And it was like really worth it. The whole, well, the
it
whole
was
it.
Because yeah. it They kept doing that throughout the entire like first few episodes and it left me like wondering, okay, what happened when you were in the military? Because a lot of the things he says or does like throughout the show, it's basically because of, you know, people are just like, oh, you're the way you are because of what happened to you in the military.
But he won't talk about it.
Exactly. He won't talk about it. But his actions are basically like when he gets like super angry and just kind of starts flipping out.
He kind of has like, and that's where I thought this was going to go, but it kind of is, it was a little different. I guess now that you bring it up, I totally forgot this was like kind of an angle. It's like in the beginning, you're kind of like, oh, he has PTSD. Like, that's just what it is. And they do show him do like some fucking horrible shit in Korea. Like he's murdering people and it's like fucking terrible. But they kind of like sidestep away from the PTSD angle and it's like, oh, he actually, because he was like, he had a relationship with the demon girl.
He did. And he also had to kind of battle like racism within the military, which was like an interesting point.
Right. I mean, that was actually a really interesting one was it was like all the wasn't it like the people, like the other soldiers look at his like Asian friend and they're like, well, you should feel right at home here. And he's like, dude, fuck off. Like, because I don't think he was Korean. And he was saying, back
I think
in America,
he was Korean, was he? But he's not native.
Right. And that was the problem they brought. He's like, back home, they all call me like, he mentioned some Asian slur in America. And he's like, over here, they call me some Korean slur for like, it kind of gives the ring of like traitor or something like that is what I kind of interpreted
as. Yeah, because they're
not
viewed very well over there.
Right. And it was sort of like, I'm damned if I do, I'm damned if I don't. And I think that kind of hits Tick in like a different way because in Korea, at least nobody's bothering him like they do in America. Whereas this guy is kind of fucked whether he's there or here.
But and the, yeah. But the girl Gia is really interesting because even before she meets Atticus or Tick, it kind of goes through like her life and you don't realize she's a demon or anything. She just seems like this ordinary girl who's learning to be a nurse or is in nursing school.
Yeah, she's like in nursing school and she's trying to get a husband.
Yeah.
Well, that's how it starts.
That's how it starts. And so she's kind of, and she has that one best friend who, of course, unfortunately gets killed by
a dirty rotten communist.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And you kind of see everything go downhill where they're closing the movie theaters because
they're communist.
Yeah. They're communist. Yeah. And her friend gets killed because she's a communist.
Dirty rotten.
Yeah.
Red.
Yeah. No, they really like are driving home the red scare stuff of the, you know, 50s in this scene especially, and they don't really talk about it much the rest of the show, which I thought was kind of interesting. Like, we're super on board with, like, let's, you know, we're showing that America is almost, like, without question fucking up people who just are claimed to be communists. And it, you know, is where you get the scene where Tick is ordered to kill her friend, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's jumping ahead. We're looking at her life every day where she's like trying to find a husband. She's like trying to get lucky. They do like a speed dating, right?
Yeah, they do.
Yeah. Which this was actually, I remember this scene now. Yeah, she did speed dating and it made me really fucking sad because it was like she like clicks with this dude. So this girl like loves movies is her thing. Like American movies.
And I think one of the movies she brings up, it has a very famous actress.
Yeah, it has. I think it has Judy Garland in it.
Yes, Judy Garland.
From Wizard of Oz.
Yep.
For those of you who, for some reason, don't know.
Yeah, but they're talking about that, basically, and they're really clicking, but then at the end, he just, right, or he...
He, like, they have boxes on there that are, like, yes or no, that the guys have.
And he marks no on it.
No.
Which I was like, dang, that's really sad. And you don't really know, like, why, because she's a pretty attractive girl compared to the other ones, at least.
There's, like, but there's, like, absolutely nothing wrong with, like, this kind of confused the hell out of me because maybe, I guess it was that he found, like, a different girl more attractive. And
well, it was her friend, right? Like,
I think so.
All the guys were kind of vying for her friend's, like, affections. Right. Which I was just like, there's nothing, except for the fact that, like, she's very confident. Like, her friend is, like, super confident. She knows who she is and stuff like that. And she gives Gia, like, a lot of tips and stuff like that.
Right.
So it's kind of like, you know, her really close friend. But I think then you start to see that she's not really a normal girl. Like, yeah, there's something different about her. And that's where you figure out when she brings, like...
She brings, like, a married dude home.
A married dude home.
And it's just, like... It kind of changed, right? Because it wasn't like, oh, you're not really looking for a husband. You're just looking to fuck. And it was like, okay, weird. And
but then she does that crazy thing.
So
where
the theme for this Halloween countdown, obviously, if you haven't caught on by now, seems to just have made itself tentacles. Because everything we've done...
Furry tentacles.
In this case, furry tentacles. Because, like, we didn't realize it. We didn't plan this. But when we started doing this, we're like, let's do Lighthouse. Let's do Lovecraft Country. Because, like, those are recent scary things. And, like, both in some capacity involve more tentacles than you'd think they do. And in this show's case, furry ones. And this scene was uncomfortable. Like, I did not like this.
Like, you get to see
all,
like, the man's memories. And it's just like him on a mountain or something. And, like, all his accomplishments, him with his family, and then just him, like, dying.
He explodes.
He does. And it's really gross.
Fucking weird. But, like, you're not even, like, saying the worst part. The worst part is that, like, she is, like, fucking him. And then I think, like, he climaxes or something, or she climaxes or something. And all of a sudden, she has, like, a tail coming out her butt. And then tails coming out of every, like, part of her body. Like, all the orifices of her body have tails coming out of them. And they go into all the orifices of his body, like his eyes and shit. And it's really fucking creepy because it's, like, in his mouth, his eyes, his nose, his ears. It's just like, oh no. Like, that's how, the whole time I was watching, I was like, oh my god. And then he just, like, explodes in a bloody mess. And her mom walks in and is just like, ugh, okay.
And,
like,
and this is where you kind of get the backstory to where, I guess, her mom was trying to bring back her dead daughter.
Right.
Who was killed by her former husband.
Is that what it was? Because her husband's was abusive?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, like, she or either she or someone else, like, killed the husband.
Right.
But in the process, her daughter somehow died, which, I mean, they kind of insinuate that she was killed by the husband. The husband was also, like, molesting her.
Yeah, they definitely, like, he was molesting her, for sure.
And so she's basically, she tried bring with the shaman lady.
Yeah, there's a, some kind of shaman lady or magic person there.
Yeah, so there's this person that knows magic, and she...
In Korea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she basically brings back her daughter, but it's not really her daughter. It's this demon. And basically, in order for her to actually get her daughter back, she has to kill 100 men. And so right. I think she gets to like pretty close, like 99 or something like that, before she meets Atticus.
Yeah, because like Tick would be number 100.
Yeah, number right. 100. And so she's really close. But, and she intended to kill Atticus because she recognized him from when her friend was taken and probably dead by now. Because
she was like, you killed my friend, so I'm going to, this is going to be good. I'll exactly. kill you.
And he's like injured and everything. Like, there's a lot of like,
Something happens to his soldiers. Arm?
Yeah.
Because he can't hold books or something.
Yeah.
He can't.
Like,
see.
He's pretty messed up. And over time, I guess she starts to grow feelings for him. And eventually they like watch a movie together at the camp. And this is where, you know, she's kind of like...
She's smitten because they bond the same way she does when the speed dating thing.
Yeah, yeah. They but she's also conflicted because, you know, this is like her last guy. And then she'll become, you know, a human, which is like what she wants to be. And she wants to do it like for her mom, I guess, if you want to call her that.
Yeah, and that's
because her mom keeps reminding her, she's like, you know, you still got one guy that you have to screw and kill.
Like, but it's so weird because her mom is like, I'm not your mother, you're a demon. Mm-hmm. When you do your job, I'll have my daughter back. And the demon is like, because the mom has, I guess, has made her think that she can't feel or something, like she's not capable of emotions. Mm-hmm. And now that she knows Tick and she's fallen for him, it's kind of like, oh, I am capable of these things. And there's a really like good scene where she, like, her and the mom argue, and she kind of uses these memories from the men that she slept with or killed, basically, like the abusive husband, for example, and uses them against the mom. And it was like really fucking, like, it was one of those like unsettling in a good way kind of type things.
Yeah, because she has the memories of the daughter, like, even right. though she's not like her daughter, she's like, I remember what your husband, so-called husband, right. did to her.
And I remember, and you like, just kind of stood there and
and you just kind of stood there and did nothing until right. you know, now she's dead.
No, it's definitely like it was a really like interesting and kind of like powerful scene of like her yelling at the mom. Mm-hmm. And it just like,
yeah. It was, and this is where I really thought good. Like things would get better. But of course, like, you know, something's going to happen. And even though she's able to experience these emotions, her, when she's like, I guess when they're having like sex.
Yeah, it seems like she can't control.
She can't control her powers. And it just kind of comes out in Atticus season and he flips out, which I would.
Rightfully fucking so. If you're having sex with somebody and then all of a sudden furry fucking tentacles start coming out of every orifice in their body, lifting you up into the air by your orifices. No, thank you.
Yeah.
Like,
and so he basically runs
he
away.
Nopes the fuck out of there.
He's
so
like, get
fast.
Away from me.
And of course, like, I can explain. He's like, nope, we're not. Fuck it. I'm going home, because he had just told her that his number came up. He gets to go home. And he's like, you come with me or whatever, I guess, to hear. And that happens. And he's just like, nope, fuck it. And like the next scene is like, back to America. We're out of here. And I'm just like, you know, I don't blame him. That's a pretty big bomb to just drop on somebody after what looks like almost a year, at least the better part of a year has passed, and like this hasn't come up yet. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, and thankfully the mother and daughter, I guess, they reconcile, and they're just kind of like she needs her because she's been kind of like pushed aside by Atticus, like, he mm-hmm. know, yeah, he just told her like he basically doesn't.
But they go to the shaman lady again.
They do,
because they want to get rid. They want to figure out how to get rid of it or something.
Well, not just that, but when she was like
basically. I was a little confused on this scene.
When she was having sex with Atticus, like, she got a glimpse of, like, his memories and then saw that he didn't, how he didn't die.
Yeah, she saw that he would die because I guess she didn't finish the deed and kill him there. So she ended up seeing, like, his future, kind of, and is like, how the fuck, like, what does this mean? What is going on? And at this point, this is kind of where, like, the mom and the spirit daughter are, like, back cool with each other.
Yeah.
And, like, they're kind of, like, she swears, like, I'll do whatever I gotta do for this. And it's, like, on behalf of my daughter. It's, like, oh, neat. Cool. You're...
But they go to the shaman lady, and they basically ask her what's up. And she ends on this note where she's, like, oh, you're going to see, like, many deaths. And
right.
Spooky.
Yeah, I mean, like, I have to say, that episode, as much as I like it, I feel like it kind of ended poorly, because, like, we're talking to the shaman lady, and it's just like, oh, yeah, no, I can't do anything, is kind of what it boils down to, is like, yeah, shit's bad, it's going to be bad, and it's like, yeah, but that's not what we asked you, like, we asked you, what the fuck does this mean? It's like, please tell us the answer, like, no. And it, later, when they flash back to the rest of the shaman stuff, it doesn't really reveal anything. They're just like,
no.
Oh, you haven't gone into the darkness yet. And it's just kind of like, what? All the while, I think, while this is going on, the main overarching plot is that Atticus and friends find... Like, they got his dad, by the way, out of Artem. And his dad... There's so many plots, it's like subplots in this show. But, like, the main plot is that they're trying to decode these pages that they found in this secret dungeon area where there was this immortal woman living there. There was, like, a whole thing. They're trying to decode these pages from a big master spell book that will give them spells and powers that the other guys don't have because the book has been missing for years. They find out that the book was stolen by Atticus's ancestor when the house burned down. And she hid it in Tulsa, and then when the Tulsa massacre happened, it got destroyed in a fire. Like, their house was burned down, and it got destroyed when the house was burned down. Which leads me into, I think, my other favorite episode. Not the Tulsa one, though that was kind of a cool, fun one, as far as the time travel stuff goes. Like, it was a neat spin on time travel.
It was.
Very Harry Potter. But I really loved the episode where Hippolyta travels the multiverse. I was like, fuck, I am here for this show. Like,
I know. I loved the black futurism.
Oh my God.
I know there's, like, a term for it, or Afrofuturism. It was so good. But basically, and I think that's where it kind of leads into the other plot points too, because that's where they get a glimpse into what's possibly going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, they go back to Artem. And they find that there's, like, a time machine there.
Yeah, because she decodes this machine that has planets all over it. I don't remember what it's called. It has a name.
Yeah.
I've never heard before. And based on those good old context clues you learn in elementary school, I'm like, that must be that thing. But she cracks the code for it, finds a key, and kind of does this, like, little fetch quest to find the clues, which ultimately lead her to the burned down mansion in Artem.
Mm-hmm. Because she's trying to find out what happened to her husband.
Right,
because
he's dead. Didn't tell her that he was killed by these wizards.
So it all leads back to Artem. And
she ends up figuring out that head guy of the wizards who died in the fire initially due to a spell gone wrong had a Rick and Morty-esque time machine, multiverse machine type thing going on.
Are you telling me that you built a time machine? Out of a DeLorean?
Shut up, Morty, you brainwashed little turd!
In some planetarium.
Yeah.
And, like, Hippolyta's a smart woman. Like, she's, like, fucking around with this thing, and she's like, okay, and she gets it working, and then it her and Tick get sucked in to the machine, or to the portal, because he's helping her, and, like, all of a sudden, aliens?
Yeah, like, aliens. But this, basically, she gets stuck on this, like, really futuristic, like, ship or whatever it is. Like, she's kind of in this containment, like, cell.
She's in, like, a cell, but they tell her it's not a prison.
Yeah, But basically, like, she's got, like, glowing strips on her arms that look like...
They look like little LCD panels on her wrist. Like,
basically. Screens. And she's like, what is going on? And this, like, big afro, like, alien person just comes and just starts, like, talking to her. Basically saying, like, you're not in prison or anything, but you need to tell me...
Your name.
Your name.
Yeah.
And so...
She yells her... I think the first one was, like, she yells her name. She's like, I'm Hippolyta. And, like, zaps to, like... the Amazonians in Africa or something, right?
Yeah.
And she's like a war, like jumps into the body of a warrior.
Yeah. And she's like, basically training for an upcoming battle. And that was the part where I was just like, wow, this is really, no, actually the first one was where she met the singer.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Because she asked her, where do you want to be or where do you want to go?
And she said on stage singing with someone, with some famous singer, right?
Yes.
Or dancing with this person.
Yeah, like up, kind of burlesque style or whatever. Or in the flappy.
She's like suddenly in France, like at a burlesque dance.
Yeah, like very flapper like times. But basically she's learning to dance really well with this like very famous singer dancer. And at the end... they're just kind of like talking about their life and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And she's like, she ends with like, I am Hippolyta.
Right.
And she just like keeps chanting or whatever. And that's when she goes to the...
Right. She goes to like the Amazonian thing. And then they train her to become this badass shit. Like it's very like, take the whole like Wonder Woman thing and kind of make it probably more accurate to the actual myth of the Amazons, which were... I believe like more in Africa than a random island. And like you just have these like women in this like kind of somewhat fortified little village and they're all like training to be warriors. And she's like kind of getting like this training, which is just, which is both physical training and like kind of mental training on like how to like approach conflict as well as how to kick ass. And it ends with this fucking badass fight sequence where, like, the Greeks or Roman army or something comes in. And they're just like, we're going to fight them. And like, okay, we got to defend ourselves. Like, that's what we do. And, like, Hippolyta at this point has become, like, general of these people or something. And she, like, leads them on a fight. And it's kind of like 100 Amazonians versus, like, 1,000 Romans. And they, like, fuck their day. And then the Romans come back. And it's sort of... This part is kind of a dick move, in my opinion, because Hippolyta is then like, all right, I'm good, and just, like, poofs out of there or something.
Yeah, but that's after, or I guess, like, before she does that, she says, I am George's wife, because, she's, like, making these statements about who she is or, like, what her name, like, first she said
is like,
what her name is, like, name yourself, you know? So she says, I'm George's wife, and she gets transported basically to being with George. But then I thought this part was really interesting as like, you know, as a black female, she's basically like, you know, I do love you and everything, but you kind of,
She talks about like how he enabled her to kind of.
Not achieve like the best that she, the best version of herself. Like he was kind of suffocating her is the word.
It makes me really, I feel like we're doing it a disservice because that scene is actually another really good one. Because she's like, it was very like, I don't hate you. I don't blame you. I did it to myself, but I have to point out that you didn't do anything to stop me. And it's kind of like, basically what she's saying is like, she sidelined herself, like as the mom. Yeah,
because her world revolved
around
her husband and like her kid, and then she kind of does this cool thing where she's like, "I can be anything," and like it transitions to her being Orinthia Blue, which is like a comic
that her daughter
is based on her by her daughter,
and she takes her husband with her, which I thought like maybe this was just kind of. Maybe it's because I'm a dude and I'm, I don't know, being defensive or something. But I really liked the scene because it was like. He isn't like, oh, well, you know, I never stopped you. He was like, holy shit, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
Like, he was like profusely sorry. He's like, I didn't even notice. And she was like, I didn't either. Like, they're both sitting there like, you didn't stop me from doing this to myself. And I did this to myself. And neither of us noticed until I did. And it was too late. And he's just like super apologetic. He's like, I'm so sorry. Like, what do you need? And she's just like, just come with me. And they basically go on this fucking, like, if HBO would just... greenlit like an Orinthia Blue series, mm-hmm. I'd be down for it because it's like retro 50s. I'm gonna make up a term. It's like retro.
It's like the Jetsons, Afro basically. Future.
It's like retro Afrofuturism stuff, like 50s style Afrofuturism.
Yep.
And it's just like them adventuring through space and like meeting aliens and shit. And I was like, this is so cool. And then you kind of, they cap it, right? Like that happens. And then you get the aliens god question mark lady.
Entity.
Yeah, this like all powerful entity is like, hey, Hippolyta, like, you get it now? Like the naming thing? She's like, I can name whatever I want. Yeah, I totally get this. She's like, you can, you don't need the little things on your wrist anymore. You can come join us in like this multiverse adventure deal.
Basically become a god, which is like crazy.
Which is nuts. And this is where I was like, man, this is like a real, because they kind of do touch on this later, is like that nihilistic Rick and Morty angle where like, for those of you who've watched Rick and Morty, you know, the whole like point of Rick is like, I can go to any multiverse. There's tons of daughters of mine. There's tons of granddaughters. There's tons of Mortys. I don't fucking give a shit. Like, I can go to one of them. If this one dies, well, there's another infinite number of them somewhere else. And that's a little like, roll my eyes at that whole thing. But like, this kind of does acknowledge that, right? Because it's like, she goes, I need to go home to be a mother to my daughter. And it's sort of like, I think later they do acknowledge, like, there's millions of daughters. Like, there's an infinite number of your daughters. You could, losing one in the grand scheme of it could be irrelevant because there's a ton of them. There's definitely that moment where she's like, no, I'm a mother, and like pop back to, well, she doesn't quite pop back to reality, right? She just kind of like,
no, it just kind confusing. Of like, yeah. She zaps like it away. Ends right there. Yeah, yeah. To where it looks like she's going back,
but then we comes cut out back to,
yeah. Tick comes out and that's where the machine breaks.
Right, the machine that would have brought her back breaks.
Mm-hmm.
But that's actually, see, that was actually, I think, one of the poor choices in this show, was the alien lady, God or whatever, told her, you don't need the technology to go home. You can just do it, because you don't need it anymore.
Yeah.
And the machine breaks, and they're like, fuck, Hippolyta is gone. And we spend a good chunk of the episodes under the impression that Hippolyta is just gone. Like, we're like, oh, fuck, she's gone. And I'm kind of like, but the alien lady said she doesn't need the shit exactly. to come home.
But like, so you said, there are multiple dimensions and maybe it's not as easy as we think. Like, if she says, I want to go back to my daughter, which daughter are you going to go back to? And they could have elaborated more on that.
Okay. I feel like the alien people with the technology to transcend the dimensional space are totally capable of understanding nuance.
Yeah, it was kind of oddly placed. Like, when she just kind of popped up in one episode, I was like, oh, that's weird.
I kind of want to rewatch that scene because I
it's like they almost forgot and then they were just like, oh, yeah, okay, we have to put her in somehow. But I would have much preferred if she did, like, not through the portal, but was just like,
came back some other way.
Yeah, exactly. Like, come on, guys, like, right, let's get out of here. Because, of course,
or like, was waiting, I think. And I mean, again, I blinked and missed it because, like, 1 minute she's not there because her daughter gets cursed by these terrifying Uncle Tom children. And
oh, they're the worst.
They're fucking horrible. Look them up. It's just fucking scary. but she gets cursed because one of them gets them. She's like turning into one. And what I remember,
she just walks through the front door.
Right, she's just like, okay, like, she is kind of like, okay, gang, let's do this. And everyone's just like, huh, Hippolyta's back. Anyway, and I'm just like, wait a minute, what the fuck just happened? Like, I feel like there should have been more, like, I would have probably, again, I missed it, so I guess I blinked and I missed it, but like, I would have been like, they all come back and then they see her over the bed or something of her daughter, like, just do something to where it's, she's back.
Yeah. Beat, or they could have done like a Star Trek, like, bzzz,
yeah, like she beams in or something. Yeah, that would have been cool.
Great.
And like, yeah, she does. And she's like so much more like empowered now. And she even talks to her daughter later because her daughter's angry because she thinks she abandoned her and shit. And she's like, I traveled like the multiverse. I learned how to do all this crazy stuff. And her daughter is, her arm is all fucked up. And she's like, I'll never be able to, you know, draw again. And she's like, I traveled the multiverse, I know some things. And she just like opens the door and you just kind of get the daughter's perspective, and she's like, whoa, and you hear things whirring and machines and shit in this room, and then it cuts. And this is all in the final episode. So, like, let's, like, I kind of want to hear your thoughts about the final episode, because you sounded surprised when I said it. Well, I didn't like it very much. So, like, why were you surprised by this?
Because that was, like, the last episode to the show that kind of wrapped things up, at least, yeah. Like, for me. There was some stuff, like, I thought they could have done better, of course. But at this point, like, they know everything that's about to go down. So, of course, right. They come up with a plan.
They also traveled back in time to Tulsa and got the book.
Yeah.
By the way.
Yeah. And so, they've got basically all of the pieces to the puzzle. And they're just like, Christina's going to kill Tick because she needs to achieve immortality. And in order to do that, she has to take blood from a black man, which is, like, really weird in and of itself. Like,
no,
it in was, order for her to achieve immortality.
I thought it was because him specifically. Like, it's... So they lay out the magic. The magic is very... If you've watched the anime Fullmetal Alchemist, it's very similar in, like, equivalent exchange procedure here. So, like, the bigger the spell you want to cast, the more something energy-based you
need. It requires the blood of a relative, which happens to be Tick.
Because he's the only one around.
Yeah.
Blood is super magical, because whatever. And... She's basically going to use Tick like a battery to achieve immortality using the book that they gave her or she stole or whatever. And the reasons I didn't like this episode was because it kind of... So take the episode where Letty buys the house on the north side, right? It's very like... There's a lot of things going on in like a depth way that I feel like really defined the show. Like you have her having to deal with the fucking north side white people. Her and Tick are kind of starting this will they won't they thing, which thankfully gets resolved pretty quick. But like that's kind of starting. And then you have her tensions with her sister, the fact that this money came from her mom, which you find at the end of the episode, it wasn't. It was actually a trick by the evil white lady who wants to become immortal. Then you also have the next horror layer of, like, the mad scientist who was stitching black people together. And the evils that he did that are kind of haunting the house.
Yeah. And not just that, but, like, the cops are kind of in on it, too.
Oh, which yeah. Is like, well, yeah, yeah. The cops are all in on the white people thing. And then they're also in on the evil witchcraft thing, which is, like, a double whammy here. But I really like that episode. There's a lot of things going on, and it does it really well to where all the things actually kind of feed into each other. And nothing is like, oh, now we gotta go deal with the racism again. Oh, let's kill the ghost and then go deal with this. Everything kind of layers up. The final episode, it sort of felt very... It's not bad, right? Mm-hmm. But it felt a lot more Abrams than Peele, I'll say. Because it started giving that, like, almost superhero movie vibe, it felt like to me. It's like, let's get the gang together. So, like, the Korean Gia... is now here in America helping out, and then, you know, everybody's like getting ready to go, and like Letty is now invincible, and you know, everyone's like, all right gang, like we have a plan. And it didn't do, I guess, what I would have liked it to do, which is either do the supervillain knows what you're doing thing, which it kind of did, kind of didn't, which sort of was annoying. But like, it was either gonna go heist movie or like superhero movie, and it didn't do either of those. It just kind of like kept wavering down the middle until it was over. And then like in that, I mean, they come up with this really hardcore plan to stop, what did you say her name was, Christina, the lady wants to become more, like we could stop her, we have this plan, we're gonna use magic against her and like lock her down or something like that. And then the whole time I'm waiting for like, okay, where is it going to be like an Ocean's movie or something where that goes wrong, the plan goes wrong, but then Atticus had a plan of a plan just in case this shit happened because he knew something was going to go wrong that's going to like trick Christina, which doesn't happen. But then Christina does figure it out because she turns into Letty's sister to like... sneak in with them or something and figure out their plans, figures it out, double crosses, if you want to call it that, them, and then gets Tick. And I guess it just felt like they hit the point where it's like, okay, Christina knows what they're doing. She's got Tick. this is it. You know, we have, we, it, it's, they have to figure out how to stop her. And it's like, oh shit, what do they do to stop her? She's about to become immortal and we don't, if she becomes immortal, like, how do they kill her? Well, shit. I don't know. Well, she has Tick and everybody's kind of stuck and she has the entire town on her side. As far as you know, up until this point, Letty had her her invincibility taken away and she shoved her out of a tower. So we're sort of fucked here.
Yeah, like everything's fucked. Like turning really bad.
But then it was like Letty, and this, maybe this is the thing that I wanted to be, was that they knew and Letty recursed herself with the book to be invincible again. Yeah. That's the only explanation I can get. And I wish it said that clearly, because she kind of is just like, oh, that hurt. Okay, yep, I'm immortal still, because she got like the demon mm-hmm. thing on her belly. And then she comes in to kind of save the day, but like doesn't save the day and is just sort of there trying to. She's reciting the spell. Tick is bled dry and Christina becomes immortal. And they figure it out by the fox lady getting in between this dark tornado that's going into Tick and Christina, and that's the darkness the shaman lady told her about. They have to like be touching was how the spell was supposed to work, and she like tentacles them, which is uncomfortable because it's like out of her eyes or some shit. She like tentacles Tick's body, tentacles Christina's body, and it, Letty is screaming the spell, and the spell works, I guess. There's like it's all just kind of over, and they realize Tick's dead, can't bring him back, and Christina's under a rock, but not dead.
Well, she's badly hurt and she's immortal, but she can't use the words of Adam anymore.
Right, so she can't use magic. They basically like took the magic. They like Avatar the Last Airbendered her and took her magic away, and
also took the magic from all white people,
which is a weird. Is only the second weirdest choice in that whole episode. I'll say the first one because it's short, but the first weirdest fucking choice in this whole episode, which was cool, but really fucking weird, mm-hmm. was the daughter, the cousin character. She comes up and her arm's been all fucked up. She's been keeping it under like a blanket because it's all gnarly. Like it looks like it's like an old man arm. And she walks in and she has this giant monster thing that they befriended or something like that, that's like defending her like a dog.
Well, it's from that protection spell that he did. Yeah, that was the protection spell. And they like, it was gave just it this to ginormous her, like, monster dog.
Right, it's this many-eyed monster dog creature, and her and it come in, everyone's gone, and the Christina's just like under a rock, like, oh, help me, oh my god, this sucks. And the girl comes in and she's like, oh, D, please come help me, like, come on, get me out from under here. And D's just like glaring at her, and she says something to her, and then she like,
yeah, she's like, they never learn.
Right. And she says something to the dog. She's like, they never learn to do that. And she throws the cape or blanket back, and there's like a fucking robot arm there. Like a legit with the wires, like fucking robot hand. And she just like grabs Christina by the throat and just like, and like kills her, which one. Makes me question the whole viability of that immortality thing, because, I mean, if you can still die from shit like that, then immortality kind of sucks. And then two, it's such a weird choice, because it's like, where do you go with this character from there? Like, she can't go back to Chicago with a robot arm in the 50s. They're going to be like, what the hell? It was a cool scene, but I don't know if it was the best idea in the world. But then the other part, which I think is the more meaningful and more in-depth part that you mentioned, is they take magic away specifically from all the white people, and they're like, magic is now ours. And
yeah, because that was
black people's, I guess.
Yeah, but that was the promise to the great-great-grandmother.
Yeah, they see her ghost and they do some stuff with that. But what did you think of that? Because I was kind of curious, like, is that to set up kind of a, like, Black Panther style season 2, where like it's just a black villain versus black heroes.
I hope there's
heroes.
Not season 2. I think this, like, for me, this is it. Like, yeah. I don't need to see any more.
I mean, I could agree with you. I think it's kind of weird.
Yeah, it could go Black Panther, but honestly, I don't really see like a point to do that, because then it's going to be black on black, and like, we don't, I don't really want to see that.
No, and that's what I kind of, That's, I guess, where I got kind of confused, because it felt like doing that specifically, not like going, we got rid of fucking magic, it's gone. Everyone's, you know, fucked as much as everyone else. It just was like, we have the power now, which in of itself is fine, but like, if you are going to do a season two of this show, you can't do anything that doesn't undermine what you, your whole message here, right? Like, it's like, you're going for empowerment, you're, and that's great, but like, your next season is either a Black Panther-esque, like, there are these black people who now have magic who are bad, versus our main characters who are good and they have to fight each other with magic, which could be cool. I mean, again, Black Panther wasn't a bad movie. It was like probably one of the better Marvel movies in my opinion. But like, I feel like that could kind of, like you pointed out, it could kind of undermine a little bit of that. Like, there's the whole black on black concept thing. Or you have white people trying to get magic back, which just kind of seems lazy, because it's just the same thing but backwards, and you don't want them to get it. Like, I don't know. I feel like I agree with you. They shouldn't make a season two, especially because they kind of killed the main character that we're kind of following. So yeah. Kind of hard to come back from that. But yeah, I think that's all those are reasons why the last episode was not my favorite by any means. But the rest of the show is pretty stellar.
So Thomas, with everything that we covered, what's the rating that you would give for this show?
On the whole, I think this show is a solid 9 out of 10. This show's really well done. There's very little in the way of, like, massive plot hole, I guess, that can't be explained away in, like, because we don't know all the rules to magic kind of type shit. I think the last episode does kind of bring it down for me, because it was dealing with a very, like, complicated character piece, and it sort of pushes that aside for a large chunk of the episode in order to get to what it gets to. And it kind of felt like they didn't really quite have it down plot-wise as far as what they wanted to happen. But yeah, 9 out of 10. And I would definitely say watch it, obviously. Like, this is a really good show. And I think it has a lot of really, like, topical and very important messages that people should know. If at the very least, like, historic messages of, hey, one, the 50s were really shitty for anybody who wasn't white, to be frank. Like, we get a lot of, like, glorifying that period of time in media, and I think this show definitely took the stance of, like, hey, no, it really sucked for other people that, you know, weren't white. Maybe don't forget that next time you start thinking about how great the good old days were, or whatever. And that goes into the parallelisms of today and stuff like that. Which, I mean, we could spend a whole episode talking about that alone, but I think this show has, like, a really solid, like, message that a lot of people need to know, and people should watch it, because it's also pretty cool, magical things, too. Like, I feel like they really nail the Lovecraft vibe.
Yeah, with the Lovecraftian monsters. That was pretty good.
What did you think of the show? What would you rate it?
No, I agree with everything that you said. Like, I definitely give it a 9 out of 10. I think that there were some parts they probably could have done better. But again, it's a TV show and it didn't have that many episodes to begin with.
Yeah, the pacing is a little funky at some parts.
The pacing is funky. And then where they put, like, specific characters and stuff like that was kind of weird. Mm-hmm. Where they also place the stories too. Because if you're going to do, like, an anthology type of thing, you got to make sure it's, like...
Right. And thankfully this didn't
quite do that. It runs smoothly together.
Yeah, this definitely walked that thin line of, like, anthology or overarching plot, and it did it really well, but there were times where it kind of skewed one way or the other. And when it skews is when you start kind of like, whoa, like, you kind of come out of the magic of the show a little bit, because you get jarred, I think, going over that, like, bump in the road, so to speak.
They had that historical component to it and show the audience, especially with, like, adventures, like, yeah, and I don't know what to call it, but, like, her, like, personal, like, overcoming, I guess, like, oh, I'm more than just, you know, like, George's wife. I'm more than just a mom. Like, I can be anything. Like, I built a damn robotic arm for my daughter.
Which, at the very least, I just want to see where that goes, yeah.
And she also had, like, a comet or something, or some planet named after her. Which was, like, really... Or that she named.
Yeah, she named a star or something. Yeah, they do, like, a whole...
Yeah, because she's some... Yeah. Like, she's an astronomer, basically. But I just thought that was really, like, empowering. And so
I kind of wish we got more of Hippolyta, just in the sense of, like, in the beginning, I don't get any inclination one way, or maybe that's the point, but I don't really get any kind of, like, inclination one way or
like
the other.
Like, she's definitely behind the scenes, and I think they did that for a reason, because she's just kind of there.
But then you suddenly, it's like, oh, she's, like, a science whiz and, like, all these other things prior to going and traveling.
And she can, like, fix things or, like, take things apart and figure out what's going on.
And she's just very unassuming in that regard, and I think it worked. It, like, worked, and it didn't, because for me, the viewer, it sort of comes out of left field, where it's like, oh, she's, like, super good at science and things. Like, cool. That's, like, there's nothing wrong with that. That's fine. But I kind of wish they did anything to hint to this. And maybe they did, and I just don't remember. But, like, anything to hint at it at all prior to her figuring out the little astrolabe machine.
And I think they did really well with actually all of the characters, to be honest. I mean, I look at Tick's dad.
The dad arc is, we barely talked about it, but oh my god, it's
there are a lot of things like we didn't really cover, especially with like Letty's sister, like in her arc with like the being at the store and being
a
white woman.
Turning into a white woman and then reverting back to a black woman and just like everything that happens there.
Like, yeah. Like there are definitely like things we weren't able to cover.
We glossed over a lot of like the anthropological episodes. Like where it's like,
but they all did such a stellar job like portraying their characters.
And giving depth to like the concepts are being presented.
Exactly. Like, there was a lot, especially things that aren't even like accepted within the black community. So like a guy being in love with a trans man. A black guy. That was like a big thing. I was just like, wow, like they actually
And they talk about it in that context you brought
up. And then
too,
like an interracial lesbian relationship.
Yeah, no, they really dial the stuff to 11 when it comes to the this wouldn't have been acceptable in the 50s and here's some more of what wouldn't be acceptable in the 50s. And it's like, we combine them together and it, you know, it's there. But the show does it really well without like, it does something that I really respect when it's done properly, is like it does this kind of diverse story without going, hey, nudge, nudge, we're doing like, this guy's gay, haha, he's gay, wait, go look, there's somebody who's gay. It's like, we're not beating you over the head with it. It's like an organic thing, and it actually plays a really big role in the rest of the show. Like, it's not just like, oh yeah, here's like your token character doing this. It's like, no, there's a very big point to this, and it actually causes a lot of things to happen that otherwise wouldn't have happened if that wasn't the case. And it's really interesting, and it gives a lot of depth to all the characters.
But with that being said, Thomas, what do we have next week?
So next week, we are dunzo with our spooky Halloween countdown. And we are going where no man has gone before. That's right, we are diving into Star Trek, more or less in its entirety, for the month of November. We're calling it No Man Has Gone Before November. But basically, the whole premise is we're kind of combining small screens and the main feed for our month, so we hope you guys are cool with that. Amber here has not really watched Star Trek, right? So you've only seen bits if I'm watching it, and you've seen the Abrams movies, right?
Yes.
But you haven't really watched the shows at all.
No.
Right. So,
like, I have not seen Orbit, Kirk.
Yeah. So, the whole premise for the month is that we have divided up sort of each generation of Star Trek into its own little pocket. What we will do is we will watch 10 episodes of each show as much as we can. It gets a little dicey in that next generation period because there's so many shows that are out, but basically we try to watch the top 10 episodes of each show. Amber and I, Amber for the first time, me for the umpteenth time, and we are going to come back and we're going to just kind of go straight into the first impressions from her, and we'll talk about it, sort of what, Amber, do you think of this show in the context of 2020, considering a lot of these, you know, aren't, you know, modern. And just kind of like, what are your thoughts about Star Trek? What do you think, especially given the whole fandom of it and its like kind of, you know, existence since the 1960s? And yeah, we'll have guests. We have a few guests lined up actually for this to talk with us that also, you know, watch the show and things like that. And yeah, we're just going to kind of go into that and get Amber's sort of opinions on each of the series that kind of came out, as well as the Abrams movies that kind of in between generations. So we've broken it up as the original series and the movies, of which Amber's seen Khan. and then we have the Next Generation in movies. So Star Trek, The Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, and Voyager. Then we kind of have the sort of funky middle years where we're sort of, we've kind of lumped in Star Trek Enterprise and the Abrams films. And then finally we wrap it up with all the new stuff. So Star Trek Picard and Star Trek Discovery. And I guess we might even throw in there Star Trek Lower Decks just because it's kind of a twist on the whole thing. At the end of all of this, the main question, Amber, will be, who is your favorite captain and why? There's plenty to choose from, and I'm kind of curious of who you're going to pick. But starting next week with the original series, with a very special guest that I am very excited to be on the show, but you will find out who that is next week. We're going to start off. No Man Has Gone Before November.
As always, I'm your host, Amber.
And I'm Thomas.
And this is So What Happens Next.